Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the magnificent Monday edition of The Yard. Hope things are well with you wherever you are. I know it's hot out there. I do. It's hot, and there's no relief in sight. I've said many times before, if anything ever drives me out of Mississippi, it'll be these Mississippi summers, but that's why we have air conditioning. But nevertheless, I hope that you are doing well. Hope you had a great weekend. A lot of things to talk about on the show today. Before we get too deep into the show, I want to make you guys aware of something. Former Mississippi State closer Caleb Reed is in bad shape. Many of you have kind of kept up with this. Many of you have participated in the GoFundMe efforts, and I'm told that Caleb has taken a turn for the worst. For those of you that are unfamiliar with Caleb and his exploits, he is a native of Greenville, Mississippi. I believe that's correct. Yeah, Cleveland, Mississippi. Pardon me, Cleveland. A product of Bayou Academy. Was here from 2009 to 2012. In 2011, Caleb Reed had a 1-2 record, but an ERA of 1.55, 12 saves, struck out 66, walked just 23. And basically, he just had multiple variations of the slider. Just wasn't much you could do with it. And occasionally, he would sneak that fastball by you just to kind of keep you honest. But yeah, finished up in 2012. It was kind of part of the deal, you know. And I will be honest with you. And if I can't be honest with you guys, I can't be honest with anybody. One of the firm beliefs that I have in life is that God makes no mistakes. And I had that discussion with David Turner after Keith Joseph and Keith Joseph Jr. Marshawn passed away. And Dave said that. You know, he said, you know, Steve, God makes no mistakes. There are things we don't always understand. And this is one of them. This is one of the things that I struggle with is when young people in the prime of their lives get sick and then often pass away. And that is something that is one of those things that is very difficult to wrap your mind around. It is for me. Maybe it's easier for you, but it is for me. But if you are of the praying kind, we ask that you pray for Caleb and his family. If you're not the praying kind, we will take all the good vibes and positive thoughts you can send their way. I'm not going to judge you on your own religious beliefs or anything like that. And I hope you don't judge me on mine. But it's not our place to judge each other in that respect. But I've traded some texts with several former Mississippi State coaches and players. Everybody is well aware of the situation, and it appears that things are deteriorating. I got a message earlier from one of our great Bulldogs in the Mississippi Delta, and we have some amazing fans in the Mississippi Delta that wanted to be sure that we knew that things were not looking promising. But we're not going to give up. You know, we believe in miracles, and that's pretty much what he needs, you know, right now. And so I want to make sure that we can speak honestly about those sorts of things without breaching any confidentiality. But he is desperately in need of prayer. And so I share that with you because we are a family. And, you know, and it's so interesting, too. There's so many people that pass in and out of our lives, kind of like tourists, you know. I'm grateful for each and every one of those people that have shared the path for a while. whether he be a coach, a player, a friend, whatever. Grateful for everybody at some point that has given us cause to get up and feel good about life, feel good about sports, to give us a chance to stand up and cheer, to go about life with a bit of pride, the good kind, not the pride that goeth before fall. But I share that with you because we are a family. You know, the transfer portal at times kind of fractures our family, as you guys are well aware. Sometimes it brings new family members in, takes old family members out, but you and I are always here. Coaches come and go, administrators come and go, but you and I are always here. We live and die with this. No matter who shows up, we're thinking, hey, I think he'll do a good job, or I think she'll do a good job, or we're glad to have them as part of our program. We have a lot to feel good about. But the one thing that I have always respected and admired about our Mississippi State family is what we do for each other in times of crisis. Maybe not what happens on the fields and courts of play. That hadn't always been a very rewarding pursuit in some respects. You know, competition's about wins and losses. But being a family is about being there for each other. And so I share that with you, and I hate to begin on a somber note, but I didn't want to end on one. And also, too, there, you know, our listener retention rates are great on this show, but you know, sometimes maybe you only get to hear the first half of the show before you get called into a meeting or something of that nature, or your run is over. But I want to tell you that we love Caleb Reed. We love his family. We appreciate his contributions to Mississippi State. And I say that just because of the fact that that's what brought him to us. That's what brought him into the public eye of our family. But that understood, we love him and his family because of what they're going through, because they have stood and cheered alongside us, shared some very special moments with us, and our thoughts and prayers are with them as they try to navigate through a very difficult time in their lives. And I think it's important for us to have an open dialogue about real life issues at times on this show, you know. And I'm not going to apologize for that. I have so many people that message me. I won't share names, but recently I had somebody that contacted me about some very difficult things that were they were facing in their life. And I reminded them all these things were happening to other people. And as a result, this person was impacted. And I shared with him, I said, you know, look how fortunate those people are to have you. And I think that's an important aspect of this sometimes too. We think sometimes everything is happening to us when it's happening to other people. We're impacted by that. But that doesn't mean that, you know, that we are in a situation sometimes that we don't hurt. You know, pain is a part of life. And I share with people all the time, especially people that are young and seeking recovery for the first time in their lives or whatever, is that the reality of that is that learning to process pain is paramount to recovery. And that's not something that's just limited to addicts and alcoholics. You know, that's a fact of life for all of us, learning to process pain in a healthy way. And I see so many people out there that they get absolutely shuttered by their pain. They get closed off to the world, and it becomes their identity. And I think it's important to understand you're not alone. Bad things happen to all of us. When bad things happen to us, we have a tendency to wonder why. But as my dad used to always say, son, rain falls on the heads of the just and the unjust alike. Doesn't make it any easier to deal with. But the reality of it is, if you haven't had something negative in your life of grave consequence, you just hadn't lived long enough. Because it's going to happen. And how we handle that really kind of defines us as people. And it is natural to grieve. It is natural to experience and feel loss. But I can believe I can say with confidence that those that we have lost would not want our lives to end over their loss. When I lost my dad, it was one of those things that it was a life-defining moment for me. Because I took all of his wisdom and expertise for granted. And he got really sick and he passed away. And I thought, how could I go on? And I thought, you know, the best way for me to kind of move forward with this is to carry his message to my children and to others. My friend Scott Sorensen, many of you that know the Jackson art community and the Finder community well, Scott was one of my first friends in recovery. And it was one of the most difficult things I've had to deal with as an adult when he passed away. And he asked me one day, he said, you know, I want you to tell our story someday. And I was able to do some of that. And When the Bottom Falls. You know, he goes, what are the chances that two guys meet up in AA and one becomes a professional artist and the other a best-selling author? And I said, the chances aren't very good, you know. And he goes, I need you to tell that story someday. And I did. And it was very difficult. And I feel a sense of obligation, responsibility, and honor to continue to carry those stories forward so those people are not forgotten. And if you've read The Dude, I talked about that too. You know, it's like, you know, a man or person experiences two deaths, the day they die, and the second one is when their name is no longer spoken. And I think that's an important aspect. As long as we continue to carry that message, those people are never really truly dead, physically dead, but not maybe spiritually dead, if you know what I'm saying. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. We love Bulldog Burger Company. We love them, love them, love them, and they love us back. It is a very faithful relationship because when you go in there and put your feet under their table, you know exactly what to expect. You know exactly what you're going to get. You may not know what you're going to order, but you know you're going to get a quality meal at a quality price and a quality atmosphere and a quality location. Three of those quality locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harper Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Get a great restaurant quality hamburger. Find your own favorites. If you're not feeling a burger, let me recommend a BLT salad. I like it grilled. You may like it fried. I'm not judging. I get mine with ranch dressing, though. You can do what you want. You can be cute and get the vinaigrette. It's up to you. And get that chocolate shake to go. It's a dining experience when you go there. A lot of places you go just to eat. I go there to enjoy eating. Because I don't just eat for sustenance. I eat for enjoyment. And, sometimes you just kind of get a meal because you're hungry, but other times you're thinking, I really want to have a quality meal. You're going to have one at Bulldog Burger Company. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay, big news today. Mississippi State adds another portal commitment. And I was told over the weekend we were expecting him to announce later in the week. He decided, you know what, I'm ready to go. So he announces today, we're talking Davion Hixon from Rice. Mississippi State faced him this year. He is a draft risk, and that's something that we're going to have to kind of navigate through. But a 6'2", 208-pound junior by way of IMG Academy, a native of Palmetto, Florida, has done some really nice things over his career. A couple years there at Rice. This year, the record's not so great. You know, and that's what happens. A lot of people that are kind of casual fans of baseball, they don't fully appreciate it. But in 2024, he worked out of the bullpen. 27 appearances, had 6 saves, posted a 3-2 record, went 54 2/3, only 39 hits, so well less than a hit per. Struck out 64, walked 33. This year, bad team. I mean, really bad team. Of course, Jose Cruz got fired. Jose Cruz Jr. got fired midway through the season. Had a 2-7 record, 3.82 ERA, 11 starts, had one complete game, went 73 innings. And again, well less than a hit per inning, 59 hits and 73 innings of work. Allowed 31 runs, 90 strikeouts against 35. So the walk numbers stayed constant, even with the heavier workload, but the strikeouts went up exponentially, almost by a third. Batting average against .220, and of course, Mississippi State did face him, and he was one of those guys too. You know, I remember writing the scouting report. He was one of those guys you look at and say, you know what, this guy can really, really pitch, it was red hot. And, of course, we faced them first when they didn't have a lot of pitching, but, of course, we got their ace. We were able to get him, though. He goes 4 2/3 of an inning against your Bulldogs, 4 hits, 4 runs, 6 strikeouts, 3 walks, gave up the 1 double, did balk a guy across, and did have a hit by pitch. But, you know, kind of got it going a little bit later. You know, Rice, not a great team this year, but they did earn wins in 4 of his last 6 starts this year. Had the big 8-inning game against Wichita State. Had a complete game win against Charlotte, and gave up just 1 hit in that ball game. And so, again, this is a quality piece, but we'll see what happens. And he is a guy, too, that's pretty deadly with the changeup. Could be an interesting piece for Justin Parker to work with. And, again, provided he comes to school. You know, that's always the caveat with this. You know, a guy that has come from a program that's got a major league coach, former major league player as a coach, got a lot of MLB experience on that staff. And so you go there with the expectation of signing a pro contract. And so that's where that sits. And the portal will close tomorrow night at midnight. And that's an important aspect of things, too. You know, of course, a lot of people are on Ace Reese watch. I've spent the whole weekend kind of navigating through some of that. I have spoke with some people that are somewhat optimistic and some that are not. And the truth of the matter is, I don't think we're going to know for sure what's going to happen until close of business tomorrow. I think a decision is close to being made. Many of you are like, you're very frustrated. You know, some of you are even angry. You know, you're like, hey, I don't understand why we're having to deal with this. You know, everybody's got to make the best decisions for themselves. We love Ace Reese. He knows that. Ace Reese loves us. And this is one of those things that it is frustrating. It is frustrating because you think we've got all this positive momentum. The number one portal class, Brian O'Connor, one of the top coaches in college baseball. We feel like, hey, we're ready to go hunting for dinner. And then our star player is not sure if he wants to be a part of it. And, again, I don't know Ace Reese's reasoning, so I'm not going to sit here in judgment of Ace. But I can tell you, I've got a chance to know his parents, Aaron and Christina, this year. Great family. You know, they want what's best for their son. And as I've shared many times, this is not a financial thing. And that's what people need to understand. A lot of people out there, of course, when there's a black hole, there's a vacuum of information, people want to speculate and fill that vacuum. And a lot of that's incorrect. A lot of it's incorrect. And so we're just going to have to kind of wait out the process a little bit and kind of just see what happens. You know, I can't offer you any code of conduct, but the one thing that I would encourage you not to do, because if Ace does go in the portal, there's still the possibility of him coming back. You know, Dakota Jordan went in the portal and then withdrew within hours. Tulu Griffin went in the portal, withdrew. Xavion Thomas went in the portal and withdrew. It took me the second time he didn't. But you understand my point. So the one thing that we want to kind of navigate against is in the event that he does go in the portal, that we have this uprising of social media people that are like, oh, well, you know, just go ahead and leave. You know, let me assure you, nobody wants that. Nobody. Nobody wants that. And listen, nobody loves the M over S brand more than me. A lot of people love it as much, but nobody loves it more. And so you're not helping Mississippi State. You're not helping Coach O'Connor. You're only venting your frustration at a guy that we would really want to have back. And, of course, hey, he may not even go in the portal. But in the event that he does, we really don't want to have all this angsty reaction on social media. And so if you see it, I'm going to ask you as a favor. If you see it, let's kind of discourage that, right? Because a lot of times we have some folks that don't want to get involved, right? Oh, trust me, I know. You know, when we went through all the Hugh Freeze stuff, there were a lot of people that were happy to support me behind the scenes, but weren't so much out there on social media. But the reality of it is there's so much of this, sometimes people get diarrhea of the keyboard and feel the need to go out there and vent their frustrations. And I can tell you, if you go out there and you attack Ace Reese, you're hurting Mississippi State. And you would argue, well, he's already in the portal. You know, he, number one, right now he's not. But in the event that he does, the last thing we need is to have, you know, the unwelcome wagon, you know, show up and start pleading their case. You know, again, the defenders of Mississippi State baseball would just have more class than that. And so I just encourage you, You know, nobody's bigger than the brand. I absolutely agree with that, 100%. No coach, no player, no administrator. Nobody is bigger than the M over S. But if you want Ace Reese to come back, the last thing that's going to be helpful is to run out there and tweet at him or go message him. And listen, and what's so interesting, too, every time something like that happens, I see some of our fans say, well, there's maybe Ole Miss people. No, we've got some people, too, that are unhinged, okay? Let's not blame everything on Ole Miss. We have some crummy people, too, that do some crummy things. And so you've seen it before. And so I just ask you to, you know, let's avoid that if we can. Because I'm told by people very close to Ace that he really does want to come back. And then the argument you would say was, well, why would he even entertain the portal? I can't answer that. I don't know who's advising him. I don't know who's in his ear. But I know this. I know that we are going to win a lot of baseball games next year, with or without him. I think we'll win a lot more with him. I think Ace is a guy that could really be the difference in us getting Omaha or not. I think this pitching staff is going to be outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. And when you've got the best pitching or some of the best pitching, you don't even have to have the best offense. And I think this offense is going to score. You know, you're always going to have that Friday night game, you know, where somebody's just feeling it, you know, and it's going to boil down to who makes the big mistake. And how many times has that been us, right? I have a lot, take a lot of pride in who we are, what we do, what we represent. And I think we're going to be really good next year. I think when you look historically at what Brian O'Connor has done, developing players and putting them into the draft, I think that is helpful. I think that's one of those things Brian O'Connor could probably get any number of people on the phone and say, hey, here's what Brian O'Connor has done for us or for me as a player. You know, and so there's some testimonials out there that are very supportive. But I didn't think we'd be in this situation 2 weeks ago, you know. I didn't. And it's not a comfortable spot to be in. You know, it's one of those things, too, you begin to think about. We just want to keep the good news flowing, right? You hired the great coach. You make the big financial commitment to baseball. You start adding players from other programs. You start feeling good about the shape and composition of your roster. And then one of the biggest pieces, a corner infielder who was a, you know, what, sixth publication All-American, is indecisive. And so, yeah, it's very frustrating. But we don't need to go vent that frustration on social media in the event that he goes in the portal. I'm hopeful that he's not. But I can't make you any guarantees. I know many of you want me to sit here and tell you everything is going to be okay. I don't know that for sure. If I did, I would tell you. And I have worked this extensively for the last 4 days. And I can tell you, opinions out there are just kind of mixed. And the one thing I can tell you is that nobody can legally talk to him. Other schools can't talk to him right now because he's not a recruitable athlete. He's not in the portal. And so that makes it a little more difficult. We can talk to him because he signed with us. You know, he's on our roster. He's our player. And so it's important to kind of understand, let the coaches work. Like, let Ace and his family and his representation work through this. I'm told this is really about just kind of getting to know the new staff, trying to understand, you know, how we're going to utilize him, if we're going to change his swing, all those kinds of things. You know, because you get a new hitting coach in, and you know, if I'm the hitting coach and I have been one before, a guy like him, I'm just turning him loose. I may fine tune a couple things, but we're not going to make any dramatic, you know, changes. You know, I'll help him in the film room and say, hey, here's how they're attacking you. Here's what I think we should do. But as far as mechanics, like adjusting his swing, nah, I'm not going to do that. Not going to do it. A guy hit 20 bombs last year, right? I mean, he was one of the best players in the country. And so it's important to kind of understand there is a process in place. It's not like Brian O'Connor and those guys are hiding under their desk in the baseball offices, just kind of, you know, watching the clock. You know, they're actively going out to do what they need to do to keep Ace Reese here at Mississippi State. So I love Ace, love his family. I know you guys do as well. And, you know, I'm absolutely supportive of him coming back. You know, and let's be honest, a lot of it's selfish, you know, on our side anyway, right? You know, that's just how sports relationships work. You know, if you're on my team, you're representing me. And so I want to win, so you help me win, so I need you here. You know, it's not a personal thing. You know, it's about something bigger. It's about the program, right? And so, you know, I think the whole thing with Ace too, when you think about beloved players at Mississippi State, and you look at what he's done already, in the event that he comes back, and let's say we get to Omaha next year, and I certainly think we're going to be capable of doing that. If Ace Reese elects to return and becomes a big piece of what could be a very special team for Mississippi State, I'm not saying you go out and build a statue, but he is a guy that would probably never have to buy a beer the rest of his life in Starkville. He'll always have a home here. He'll always have an opportunity to come back. He'll always have a family. And, you know, you start thinking about three transfers in 3 years. Do you have that same sense of relationship, you know, with a new team? You know, I think the whole mercenary thing, you don't really endear yourself to that fan base. It's just my feelings. And that's the thing I think is important in all of this is, you know, you begin to think about legacy. And some would say, well, what about draft stock? Guys, he's already projected to be one of the top 15 players in a draft. If he comes back next year and is anywhere comparable to what he was a year ago, he's going to be one of the first position players taken in the first round of the 2026 Major League Baseball draft. And we'll be getting ready to kind of navigate through the 25 draft here in about 2 weeks. And it's a two-day event now instead of a three. And so that's a big part of this thing as well is, you know, roster composition. There are some guys out there, obviously, that we're kind of waiting to see if they're going to be drafted. And there'll be a big run there at the end of guys making decisions. There's going to be a lot of guys that maybe don't commit to a school, kind of hoping they get pro baseball opportunities. They don't get them. They'll be needing somewhere to play, and they're going to be veteran guys. So, you know, I think we're pretty close. A few more pieces are being done with this thing. But the draft is going to be a big part of this because there are some guys right now, three guys for sure, that we expect to get taken the first day among our high school signees, and they're not going to come to school, right? And I think, number one, part of that is the product of the coaching change, but more importantly, the fact that they're elite players. But they don't really have a relationship with this staff, right? And so it's a lot easier to tell somebody you don't know well, hey, no, I'm not going to come. It's a little different when you got somebody that's been telling you for 2 years how much they love you and how much they want you to be a part of the program. It's just different, you know. So we've got some guys in the signing class. They're going to sign pro contracts. We've got some guys on the 2025 roster. They're going to sign some pro contracts. Ace is not draft eligible, so that really impacts him. But it does impact the complexity of this team and the composition of this lineup. And I think that's one of those things you got to kind of navigate, too. If you're Brian O'Connor, you think about some of the high school signees and commitments that he has kind of put together historically, he's done a good job of getting those guys to come to school. And I had a couple of Major League Baseball scout friends tell me that Virginia was one of those schools. It's a tough sign because of the fact he really sells them on the college experience. And so while that may not be as big a deal for us this year, I think in the years to come, as we get to the draft, I don't think we're going to be sweating things out quite as much as maybe we are this year. But listen, we knew that Landon Harmon and some of those guys that, you know, they were part of the deal. You know, we knew when they signed with us, when they committed to us, that they were going to be a major draft risk. And then, you know, those guys ended up going to the MLB Showcase last year and just hit bombs left and right. Landon Harmon starts the Perfect Game Showcase, you know, the National Showcase game. He's the starting pitcher. And so those are the caliber of players that we've been able to sign. Of course, those guys are Mississippians. But you look at next year's class, right now we don't have any Mississippians committed for that class, which is kind of a rarity. But we are a national recruiter. And Brian O'Connor is a guy that has been a national recruiter as well. And it's really done well up the Eastern Seaboard. So I think you're going to see the recruiting footprint continue to expand for Mississippi State. And, you know, we'll kind of figure this thing out. But by the time we get together on Wednesday, we will know for certain what to expect as far as Ace Reese's intentions with the portal. Again, he may go in and may return. He may not go in. He may go in and go somewhere else. All of those possibilities remain. But no matter what he chooses to do, we should not forget who we are and what we represent. And we shouldn't go out there and be low-class and low-brow individuals venting our frustration at a player that we desperately want to be in maroon and white next year. I think that's important to understand. And I hope that you feel the same way. And again, when you see it on Facebook or you see it on Twitter, it's a little more complicated on Twitter, right? Because a lot of times people can go directly at a player. It's not helpful. It's just not helpful in any way whatsoever. So please, I would encourage you to discourage that kind of behavior. And when you see it, you know, maybe message them and ask them to delete it. You know, I don't know how often Ace checks his notifications. I had to check mine all the time because I never know when you guys may have a question or things like that pop up. But the reality of it is that, you know, we've got a very interesting deadline ahead of us here in just over 24 hours. Best of luck to all Bulldogs. It's time for today's player of the day. It's going to be pitcher Ryan McPherson. Let's thank our friend Blair Chandler, our collective friend in the mortgage industry, Blair Chandler. Visit him at closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is a mortgage professional. Look no further than Blair Chandler for your mortgage needs. Whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, that's the way to go. Blair Chandler. Get that pre-qualification letter. That is a life hack they don't tell you about. And it's probably one of the best things you can do for yourself. You don't want to waste your time shopping above your means. So depend on Blair Chandler, a Bulldog through and through, season ticket holder in multiple sports, has a place here in town. Could help you have a place here in town too. Maybe a game day condo is in your future. Yeah, for sure. I suspect you'd use it. Rather than wait around hoping for something to happen, get with Blair Chandler and make something happen. Phone number 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. The only name to know in mortgage loan origination is Blair Chandler. 24 years of experience. Get his knowledge and expertise working for you. He can get you to the closing table when so many others can't. I mentioned Ryan McPherson got added to Team USA. Trials. Hopefully he can make that team. Saw a report earlier today from Baseball America's, D1 Baseball's Joe Healy. Joe made the move here a couple years ago over to D1 Baseball, providing coverage of the Team USA trials, and that Ryan McPherson had a very clean inning earlier today. I don't know how deep the appearance went. But, Ryan McPherson, a guy, too, that has repped the Bulldog brand, a young man that has defended the Bulldog brand, and a guy that we expect to be a huge part of our pitching plans in 2026. So, Ryan McPherson, your player of the day. Now, we turn to our top 10 list. I got a request from someone who kind of chose to remain anonymous and said, Steve, I'd like to hear a little more country on the show. You know, country's not really my thing, but I thought we'd come up with a good compromise. Your top 10 list is always brought to you by Kalido Guitars. That's C-A-L-I-D-O guitars.com. That's the only name to know in guitars. So whether you're a new player, a seasoned player, a professional player, you can find what you need at Kalido Guitars. And if you've got a guitar player in your family, let me encourage you, make Kalido Guitars your supplier for all your guitar needs, whether it's gig bags, guitar cases, accessories, or the instruments themselves. You can find everything you need at Kalido Guitar. This is a company based out of Lake Jackson, Texas, Mississippi State owned and operated. And again, I like to keep business in the family. Stop by and see the showroom when you're in that neck of the woods or visit them online at KalidoGuitars.com. You can also call them. We've got a promo code for you, too, because they're going to provide some incentive to show you how serious they are about your guitar business. Promo code BSR, as you know it well, right? That gets you a 10% discount off your purchase, no matter how big or how small. That gets you free shipping. That gets you no sales tax if you live anywhere other than the state of Texas. And they'll make a donation, a 5% donation of your purchase price to the Bulldog Excellence Fund. What other incentive do you need? A discount, free shipping, no sales tax in most cases. and then a donation to Mississippi State to help us field more competitive teams on the courts and fields of play. Koleto Guitars, your one-stop shop for your guitar needs. All right, so back to our topic. We want more country on the show. I don't know a lot about country, to be fair. It's never really been my thing. I'm not going to hate on country music. I got some friends that love it, and there's some songs that I like too. You know, it's true. But I thought, hey, let's do a top 10 list of country covers of rock songs that you may know. And there's a bunch of them. And I think maybe what we do on Wednesday's show is let's flip it. Rock covers of country songs. We'll see if we can put a good list together. But here we go. Top 10 country covers of rock songs. Number 10 is Townes Van Zandt's cover of the Rolling Stones' Dead Flowers. Now, I've read some commentary online about this. I like their version of it. I don't like it as well as the Stones, but there's some opinions out there that people say, hey, this is kind of what the Stones were going for. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I think it's an interesting observation. Number 9, a group called Dillard and Clark, my first foray into their musical catalog. Not bad. Maybe new names to you too. They covered the Beatles' Don't Let Me Down. And you guys are well aware of that old video of them on the rooftop and John Lennon wearing that fabulous fur jacket. I don't know. Don't message me. Don't do it. I don't know your feelings about that. But nevertheless, it was very fashionable. Number 8, and this is a little bit lower. Even though I love this rendition of the song, I don't really consider it a rock song, though. It's more of a folk song. It's some traction here in recent years as Luke Combs covers Tracy Chapman's Fast Car. Of course, I think it was the Grammys. They performed together. Pretty good deal. And I can tell you the young ladies in my family absolutely loved that. And I think it's pretty neat that a song from my teenage years resonates so well with a new generation. So thankful to Luke Combs for bringing that song, a different rendition, obviously, of a song that he grew up with listening to riding with his dad. Number 7, Cody Jinks. Some of you guys know him. This is a different version for sure, and I was a little surprised to find this. He covers AC/DC's It's a Long Way to the Top, and the subtitle, If You Want to Rock and Roll. Interesting that a country guy. You know, you guys know Cody Jinks. We hear it at Duty Noble all the time. Number 6, I really like this one. And you say, but Steve, why is it number 6? Well, it's because the songs ahead of it I like even more. It's an artist by the name of Casey Donahue. He covers Matchbox 20's 3 AM, and I think does a really good job with it. Takes some ownership of the song. The arrangement's a little bit different. Made a little more country. I think you'll dig that. Number 5, Jason Isbell. A lot of fans of Jason Isbell around there. Turns out he's a Metallica fan. Pretty good cover from him on Sad But True off the Black Album. You guys are familiar with that. There's a handful of people that have covered Sad But True. It's kind of synonymous with good rock music. Number 4, one of my favorite country performers, and it's really more outlaw country, and he's a guy that can really play the guitar. There's a lot of people that are just kind of 2 and 3 chord progressions, and there's not a lot of technical ability in their play, but I think Chris Stapleton's a guy that we can all kind of say, you know what, this is a guy that's got a special blend of talent. He also covered a Metallica song, and he's covered several songs over the years, but Nothing Else Matters from Metallica, your number 4 track, the Chris Stapleton version. Number 3, there's a live version of this. I don't know if there's a studio version, but the live version absolutely rips. And Gretchen Wilson steps out there and says, I guess it's time to rock and roll. And the crowd goes nuts. Her rendition of Hart's Barracuda is certainly worth your listening time. Number 2, going back to the Kiss tribute album of the early 90s, it's called Kiss My You Know What. A lot of people jumped in and covered different Kiss songs. Garth has said many times that bands like Kansas and Kiss were huge influences on him. Of course, not a lot of Garth's music is available on iTunes and the streaming platforms. This one is. And it's Hard Luck Woman, which is perfect considering Garth Brooks, right? I mean, if you think about, number 1, the original composition of the song and how Garth Brooks kind of took it and made it his own. It was a hit. as it should have been. But number one, and some people would say, Steve, this isn't really a rock song. I disagree. Trent Reznor is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Johnny Cash covered the song Hurt. And if you've ever seen the video, Johnny looks physically ill as he's performing this. Not because of the subject matter, but I think because he is a guy that really emotes. And what's interesting, I've read some commentary and watched some videos about, you know, when Johnny put this covers album together, that they pitched it to him, and once he heard it, he kind of knew exactly how he wanted to do it and did it just in a couple of takes. And Johnny, of course, you know, a legend, as you guys are well aware. But that's my list of top 10 country covers of rock songs. Many of them, you know, very popular tracks. And I like it when we kind of switch it up a little bit, to be honest with you. I know you guys love the covers, and some of you love country. So this is an opportunity for us to kind of let worlds collide a little bit on the show. Country and rock together, holding hands in one loving place here on the Boneyard. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let me know. You never know, we may just do it. If you want credit, we'll give it to you. There's some people that just want the list. They don't even really care about credit. I like to credit people when they provide us content opportunities here on the show, but this particular person says, you know what, I just want the list. And so that's your list, and it may not be exactly what you wanted. You wanted more country. Well, I gave you some country fried flavor of some great rock songs. So I think this is something that everybody can kind of get behind. You know, we'll see. You know, and it's interesting, too, how country has kind of been homogenized over the years. And again, maybe this is my get off my lawn moment. You know, for me, I don't like the track country that much. What I mean by that is that backing track with the bass line and all that stuff that makes it more poppy. That's my feeling. You know, and I was a Shania Twain fan too. You know, when Shania went global, you know, people were like, "Oh, well, she sold out or whatever." You know, I think Shania Twain, number one, incredibly talented, incredibly beautiful, but also too, I think that her earlier stuff was very country, and then she, you know, got mixed up with Mutt Lange, much to his benefit, I guess. But nevertheless, her sound began to change and become a little more poppy, and some people kind of rejected that. And it's interesting, you kind of see the same thing happening in Taylor Swift. But all of it is so incredible to me. I just love music. I know you guys do too. There are a few bands out there that I just can't tolerate. But that's just life, right? I think everybody kind of sees it for what it is. We don't always have to agree. But I tell you, it's interesting. I shared a video yesterday, a Bryan Adams video. It's crossed the feed a couple times, and it kind of struck me yesterday as I watched it again. Bryan Adams, in the late 80s, maybe early 90s, was getting ready to perform Heaven, and the crowd just kind of took over before Bryan even began to sing, and he let the crowd kind of carry the tune through the first few bars, and shared it on my Facebook and said, you know, there's a reason that, you know, Generation X is considered to be the best music generation of all time. And I think a lot of it's just because we were able to celebrate life. And for many of us, I know, like growing up in South Mississippi, we'd go cut, you know, we'd go mow yards and rake leaves and things like that to raise money to buy concert tickets and buy shirts to pay for our trip and have souvenirs and things of that nature. There was so much of that. And so it was a big effort to be able to go to a show. And we had some huge acts that came through the great state of Mississippi back then. And it felt like there'd be a great show in Biloxi one month and a great show in Jackson the next. And living in Columbia, you know, we were about 90 minutes away either way. And so that's what we did. We found out that an artist was performing. And then we would go, and it was such a big deal. It was such a big deal to go and to see these artists that you saw on television, on MTV, playing in our state. And we turned out and we supported them. And there were no cameras around. There were no recorders. You know, maybe a few bootlegs here and there. But we just were lost in a moment, singing our favorite songs with our favorite artists in the same venue, and it really was a special time. It really was. And you read all the comments on Instagram, and people are like, you know, I remember when music was like this. I wish it was still the same. It's like nowadays everybody wants to go record their favorite song so they can go post it on Instagram, because everybody is a digital creator these days. They want to get some compensation on that, kind of gleaning that from somebody else. And I would encourage you too, maybe there's not a need to document everything when it comes to periods of enjoyment. You know what I'm saying? It's like I believe when it comes to work stuff, I like to have a written record of stuff, so I like to operate with email a lot. So I got a lot of phone calls and things of that nature. But you know, when you do interviews, you want to document things just because you never know when you may have to go back and refer to it. But when we're getting out just kind of enjoying life, do we really need a record of that? You know, why can't we just have the memory of that? To me, the memory is special. It's one thing, you know, like when I got engaged, there was one witness who kind of hid around the corner as I popped a question. But we didn't have a photo shoot. We didn't have a video. We didn't have a parachute squad or anything like that. I asked her to marry me, and she said, of course. And now here we are all these years later, and happy to have her still. But I remember that. I didn't have to go back and revisit it. I just remember getting down there. I remember being so nervous, too, thinking that she would think it was too soon. And I remember asking her, and then she walked inside, and her grandmother asked what I gave her for her birthday. And she just held up this very, very, very inexpensive engagement ring. It's all I could afford at the time. And she said, is that an engagement ring? And her mom popped up and said, is it? And she just nodded her head that it was. And all of a sudden, we were no longer kids, and we were taking steps towards adulthood. And one thing I'll tell you about that, too, marriage is for grown folks. And it's difficult sometimes. It is, especially when you stay married as long as I have. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that just about anything can be worked out, just about anything. You know, never, ever, you know, going to be a defender of any brand of abuse. But it's funny what kind of classifies as abuse these days. But, yeah, all that's very interesting to me. But nevertheless, if you treat somebody well and with dignity and respect, it's amazing what you get back. And I think there's so much of this today, especially in the social media culture. You have all these advisors, right? People you don't even know. Like you put something on Facebook and, you know, there are a lot of people that overshare on social media. And then there's all these people that kind of run to offer their level of advice. And a lot of it's not good advice. And so I think it's important. Don't live in a vacuum. You know, it's so funny. You know, like I see these some of these ladies sometimes will, you know, post a comment about their relationship troubles. And there's always some army of simps that show up, you know, that, oh, no, you deserve better than that. You don't even know how she's being treated. You only hear one side of this thing, you know. It's just how it works. There's always some dude out there ready to simp, though. Always, 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 always. And it's just part of the deal, you know. And that term, simp, goes back a long way. It's not new for this generation. It's kind of taken root again, but it's something that came around when I was a teenager, you know, just kind of how life works. But nevertheless, let us know if you have ideas for the top 10 list. We may just use your idea. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart, and why? Because they have what we want. They got more Mississippi State merch. Whether it be apparel, gift ideas, everything you need to detail out your fan cave, you can find it at Campus Bookmart. Stop by and see their smiling faces the next time you're in Starkville. If you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is not a great shopping day for you, visit them online at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR. That's right, Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. Football season's coming up. I encourage you, while you have some favorite shirts, it's time for a new favorite shirt. Ladies, maybe it's time for you to get a new favorite t-shirt. It's going to be hot, man, these early games. You need to have something comfortable. Maybe find you a cool tank. But nevertheless, you can find whatever you need at Campus Bookmart. And they do a great job. I love doing business with them. Every time I go in there, I walk out feeling satisfied with that purchase. I suspect you will as well. All right, time for another opponent preview. We've gone through four of these so far. And Mississippi State will SEC opener will be against Tennessee. Now, let's take a quick look back at Tennessee's season last year. On this show, I told you guys I felt they were a dark horse to make the playoff. They do make the playoff without having to play in the SEC title game. I don't know if I feel as confident about this team as I did last year, and a lot of it's quarterback play, right? And we'll get to that shortly. But looking back at last year, 10-3 season, 6-2 record in the Southeastern Conference. They were a perfect 7-0 at home, 2-3 away in true road games, and then they won one neutral site game. But, you know, kind of looking back at this thing, Chattanooga, they open up and blast them. They get NC State in Charlotte in one of these neutral site games, and they destroyed them 51-10. And NC State was ranked in the top 25 at that time, and that was a really loud win. The Chattanooga thing you expect, but to beat an ACC opponent on neutral ground by 41 points, that stands out. The next week, it's a 71-0 pasting of the Flashes of Kent State. And so you look at these first three games and you think offensively that Tennessee is going to be elite. Well, they were for the most part. Down the stretch, though, it was really more about the running game than it was the passing game. They go to Oklahoma, kind of get the revenge game. Josh Heupel, of course, former Oklahoma quarterback. They go over there. At the time, Oklahoma was ranked 13th in the country. They end up with a losing record. But that was a big win for Tennessee. It kind of legitimized them in the eyes of a lot of pollsters. It's like, yeah, the NC State thing may have been a fluke, but you expect them to blow out Chattanooga and Kent State. They beat Oklahoma by 10. Not a huge game, but a big win. The next week, you just felt like, okay, Arkansas has kind of struggled a little bit offensively. Tennessee ought to be able to go in there and win that game. They don't. They suffer their first loss of the year. And then some people started saying these guys may be a fraud. And, you know, it's tough to win on the road in the SEC, especially in back-to-back weeks. The following week, they hosted Florida. And I was just looking back there. They had a bye week before the Arkansas game. Yeah, so, yeah, it's back-to-back games, not back-to-back weeks. So they go, they play Florida. They win that game in overtime, 23-17. And again, not much was expected from Florida last year. So again, it's a game you expect to win. But you're like, you know what? Maybe this offense isn't nearly as good as we thought. That's three straight games where 25 points or less. Yes, it's SEC competition, but maybe they don't have the skill guys we thought. Well, they found a way to beat Alabama again. And granted, it wasn't a great Alabama team. It was a really good Alabama team. And, you know, there's all this talk about standards and things like that. And I think Kellen DeBoer, this year is a huge year for his tenure in Tuscaloosa. I think you'd all agree. It's not a hot take. But Tennessee gets Alabama in Neyland for the second consecutive time. They went, you know, a generation, it seemed, without beating Alabama. Well, they do it here 24-17. Then they get Kentucky to come in here, and you start stringing some things together. Kentucky always has these weird alignments. There's always so many weird things that happen with the Wildcats. And lo and behold, they get the dub in Knoxville 28-18. And again, this Kentucky team, very up and down last year. Wasn't a great team. Of course, they, you know, they win the game against Ole Miss when we were all excited about that. But, well, not a great Kentucky team. But, again, some questions about the offense. Well, then we go rolling into Neyland Stadium. And it was a game for a while. And then that running game just kind of took over because it's a terrible matchup for us. It was last year because we were just kind of powerless against the run. They had a guy that got votes for the Heisman is their lead running back. And they get us 33-14, but again, it was competitive for a while, as you guys are well aware. That third period, it just felt like Tennessee kind of came out and said, okay, let's go put this thing away. The next week, they lose to Georgia, 31-17. And again, offensively, not great. Not great. They blast UTEP 56-0. And then a very, very exciting game with Vanderbilt. Now, how many times have you said that in your life? Not many. Vanderbilt was better. I mean, statistically, they weren't great, but they found a way to win, right? And so the Volunteers win the, quote, rivalry game, the Battle of Tennessee, 36-23. And that was a huge game. You know, Vanderbilt was up for that. And then ultimately, they go play Ohio State, the eventual national champion, in the first round of the CFP. They get smashed 42-17. And there were a lot of people on Tennessee socials that were very angsty. You know, they're like, hey, Hype's not going to get it done. And I'm going to be honest with you, and I don't mean this to be disrespectful to Tennessee, I think that team probably hit their ceiling. I don't think Nico was great. There were times he was really good. And certainly not, you know, worth all the drama that he created in the offseason. And again, that's one of the more disappointing things that I've seen in college athletics. To do that then, you know, it's tough. So Tennessee last year scored right at 36 points a game, but really the story of that team was their defense. You know, you think about Josh Heupel, you think about the air raid, you think about a lot of these advanced passing concepts where they just kind of light you up vertically. They did some of that, but what made them a playoff team was their ability to stop the run. Really, really good rush defense last year. For a stretch, I'm not sure how they ended, but for a stretch, they were number one in the country. They also ran for 3,181 yards. That's pretty impressive, no matter how it goes down. The net, 2,942. So 13 games, and you've rushed for almost 3,000 yards, and you throw in 2,900 yards of passing offense. Guys, there was only like 27 yards. Is that right? Not quite. Less than 100 yards between the passing and rushing offense. So incredible balance. And again, when you've got a team that can play defense, sometimes you can play a little more ball control, and they did, especially against us, a lot of keep away there. But, you know, really good special teams last year too. And so, again, a lot of people were excited about their prospects for this year. Dylan Sampson, of course, outstanding player, ran for nearly 1,500 yards last year and 22 touchdowns. Got banged up against us a little bit. But and then Nico Iamaleva, he was the third leading rusher on this team, had 109 attempts, which is the second most of Tennessee ball carriers last year. Deshaun Bishop was kind of a complimentary back for them, but only had 74 carries. Ran for 455 yards. And so it's a little different dynamic now when you think about what this team could be, especially offensively. But when you go back and look at these defensive numbers, I mean, they're just gaudy. I mean, that was a really, really good defense. And probably not heralded the way that it perhaps should have been. Let's take a look at this year's schedule and we'll kind of break down what they've got coming back. And it'll be interesting to see what Joey Guillory can do. You know, UCLA and Tennessee basically swap quarterbacks. But they open up August 30th. Same time we're playing, except they will not be dealing with the heat. They will be in the air-conditioned Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Atlanta, Georgia, as they take on Syracuse. You kind of like Tennessee's chances in that game. East Tennessee State is game number two. So we're 2-0 as we head into hosting Georgia, or the Volunteers. You know, Georgia, you look at them and say, you know what, hey, they lost a lot last year, but you know what? Kirby Smart has kind of proven to be able to sustain this thing. The next week is UAB. So I'm going to say 3-1 at this point when they get ready to head to Mississippi State. Now, that could be an afternoon game, could be an evening game, could be a chance for us to use the LED lights, which we're so excited about, right? Finally got it done. We want to see them in action. And so when you begin to think about the flex schedule on this, this is all going to basically be about where each team is. If Mississippi State's 3-1 or possibly 4-0, and Tennessee's 3-1, probably going to be a primetime game. If either team is struggling, probably going to be an afternoon game. So we want to win games and we want to be able to play at night. I mean, this could be like, you know, the later game, you know, the true night game. And how much fun would that be? You know, and I had this discussion with Bo Bounds earlier. If you think about what is to come for Mississippi State, if you go 4-0 in the non-conference, that game against Tennessee is probably sold out. You go 3-1 in a non-conference. Like if you lose to Arizona State and you're not really as competitive as you want to be, there's probably 45,000 people against the Tennessee game. I mean, it just my feeling. But if somehow, if you go 4-0, the atmosphere when the Volunteers come to town may be like something we haven't seen in a few years. That's how important, again, that Arizona State game is. It really kind of sets the tenor of everything. After that Mississippi State game, they get an open date, and then, again, they will take on Arkansas. And, again, Arkansas, kind of modest expectations this year. Tennessee was so good stopping the run last year, you thought, well, they should have been able to beat Arkansas. That they didn't. So Sam Pittman obviously will have a good game plan together. The next week, again, that third Saturday in October, we can continue to do it, but the rest of the league is no longer held hostage. They'll head down to Bryant-Denny Stadium, which is a big game for both teams. Then they travel to Kentucky. And I'll be honest with you, I think this is a real trap game for Tennessee. And let me tell you why. You're going to get absolutely jacked to go play Alabama. Then you got to go to Kentucky. And even though it's a good atmosphere, it's just kind of weird. I mean, it's a different deal. The next week on the schedule, without benefit of an open date, is Oklahoma coming to Neyland. And so sandwiched in between those games is that road trip to Kentucky. And again, it was a weird game last year. It typically is. And I think it's one of those things where you know, Kentucky just kind of lies in the reeds a little bit. They do some weird things. It's difficult to prepare. And it's so hard to get up emotionally. And again, this is just kind of evidence of how much of a grind the SEC schedule is. And if I'm Kentucky, I'm loving this placement. Loving it. Because of the fact it's so difficult to get up emotionally week in and week out. The great guys do it. The good guys do it occasionally. Bad guys struggle with it. But that's a tough stretch. Alabama, Kentucky, and Oklahoma. If you had that game at Neyland, you might feel a little bit different. And I'm not ready to call the upset, but when we get ready to pick this game in October, that's going to be one of those ones we probably highlight. After Oklahoma, it's New Mexico State. That should be a bloodbath. They have to travel down to Florida. And that's an interesting thing, too. What kind of shape will Florida be in by the time we get there? Where will DJ Lagway be? Will he be in a scenario where he is, you know, getting some minor Heisman buzz? Will he continue to take the next step? That's a real good question. And then they get Vanderbilt at home. And so you start running through this. Like, where are the sure losses? Honestly, at this point, I think Georgia is probably the only sure loss, even though that's in Neyland. I expect it to be a competitive game, but I think Georgia, athlete to athlete, is better than Tennessee. And then you kind of go from there. And again, you know, there's some quirkiness in the schedule, but there's nobody you look at and say, you know what, there is head and shoulders better. But so much of this is going to hinge on quarterback play. That's an important aspect of it. What's going to happen with Guillory? Come on. It's not Guillory. I got a friend named Joe Guillory. And so it's Joey Aguilar. My mistake. Don't message me. Joe Gill was in the furniture business with me. But anyway, Joey Aguilar, who was at Appalachian State and then transferred to UCLA, expected to kind of take over. Doesn't get the benefit of the spring in the system, but the guy put up some huge numbers at App State. Averaged over 3,000 yards passing per season and 56 touchdowns over the two. And so you start thinking, okay, this is a guy that's capable of making plays, but how much of this is going to rest on his shoulders? Then you got to replace Dylan Sampson. Incredible player. Incredible. But now he's gone. And so you got to replace your quarterback. You got to replace your star running back. They've got some losses on the offensive line. They've returned some pieces too. But four of their five starters from a year ago no longer with you. And so there's going to be some younger guys that will be in the mix there. They did hit the portal there. So they'll have to kind of, you know, meld this thing together. But the reality of it is a lot of pieces missing off of this Tennessee team. And you say, well, Steve, how does this relate to us? I like getting them early before they have found a sense of themselves. And again, Joe Aguilar, Joey, will have to come into what I think will be a very hostile environment, perhaps in a night game situation, where you guys are not going to be very hospitable. And they won't have Samson to kind of rely on. Like, remember last year, Nico gets knocked out of the game, and Samson just kind of has to carry the load late. And he was kind of in and out, kind of got a little bit banged up, but the guy was a winner. And so the pieces you used last year to get to the playoffs in many respects are gone. And, again, that defense was so great last year. And it really, it kind of harkens back to some of those grateful former teams in that respect because they had athletes, especially in the secondary, and then they had size up front and guys that could get off blocks. Very impressive, very impressive. But it'll be interesting. You know, they the secondary this year, kind of having to put some things back. Arian Carter is back there at linebacker. But, you know, the back seven will only be as good as the front four. And so it's going to be interesting to kind of see how this thing plays out. But, yeah, are they a top 25 team? I don't think there's any question. Are they a playoff team? I just don't think so. Now, they could surprise some people because, again, I think somewhat the schedule has some favorable stretches in it. But they're probably a nine-win team when it's all said and done. Again, you feel like Georgia – is probably a loss. And then, again, that stretch, Alabama, Kentucky, Oklahoma, that's probably going to define the season. You win two of those three, you're probably a 10-win team. You lose two of those three, you know, it's probably a Florida Bowl game, you know, somewhere. But expectations for this team, you know, and again, I don't know if it's fair to Josh Heupel, that people are always like, you know, we just didn't do enough. Again, I think Tennessee hit their ceiling last year. And who in the playoffs, honestly, on their side of the bracket, do you think that they couldn't beat Ohio State, which nobody could. But if they played Texas, would you have picked Texas or Tennessee? You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, if they played Arizona State, are you picking Tennessee or Arizona State? And there's a lot of those things out there. Again, I don't know that there were a lot of great matchups. And, again, I think a lot of it boiled down to – your quarterback play. You know, everybody in the playoffs are going to be really good at stopping the run. And so they're going to force you to throw the football around. And, again, you look at those numbers last year, you know, with Nico. And let's see if we can get a little more detail kind of about that. It's also interesting when you look back in hindsight. But a lot of this stuff, you know, game by game, you look at it – you know, it's maybe not what you'd expect. You know, of course, you put up gaudy numbers in these incredible blowouts. I mean, like, guys, so against UT Chattanooga, Tennessee put up 718 yards of offense. They ran for over 300. They threw for over 400. That's just not going to happen. Against NC State, they put up 460. Then against Kent State, 740. And so the point that I'm kind of getting here is that there were a lot of these games that maybe padded the stats early, and then they had that little lull, and then kind of found a sense of themselves. And I think a lot of it is when Samson really kind of took off for them. But from Alabama, Kentucky, and Mississippi State last year, all those were over 400 yards of offense. Against Georgia, a near season low at 319. The season low in the regular season came against Florida, ironically. But Ohio State, with that very athletic secondary and that very great front, limited them to just 256 yards. And so at some point, you got to figure these things out. But again, you look at the passing numbers, you know, it's just, I'm just not quite sure what to expect from this passing offense. Against Ohio State, they threw for 104 yards. As a matter of fact, the final nine games of the year, eight games of the year, 10 games of the year. Final 10 games of the year, they never threw for over 300 yards. And actually, you can go back farther than that. I mean, you know, you only had the one 400-yard game. But of the final nine games, 10 games. One, two, three, four, five, six of those games, you had less than 200 yards passing. So is Aguilar going to be able to take this passing game to the next level? That kind of remains to be seen. And the summer will be big, and the early portion of the schedule will be big. But, yeah, Tennessee, be a good team, probably a really good team. Will they be a great team? That kind of remains to be seen. But, again, I think they'll be a very solid bowl team. Do I think we can beat them? I think we can. But I think we have to be healthy, and we have to be sure that we have a sense of who we are. And, you know, we do have the benefit of having Blake Shapen back, a quarterback that has now been in the system for 2 years. They've got a quarterback that's showing up that didn't even go through spring practice. Now, football's football in many respects. You know, a lot of the concepts are the same. But, again, I do think getting them early is big because they're not going to learn anything about themselves against East Tennessee State. You may learn a little bit something about yourself against Georgia. And I don't, you know, UAB, you know, I don't know how much the starters play in the second half of that game. We'd love for UAB to make it a game. But the reality of this thing is this is a Tennessee team that will be a quality opponent. We're going to have to bring our best effort. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse is the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle when you're getting a large group together. And if you know what, you should. We did and had a blast. We stayed there for New Year's. We'll probably do it again this year. It was just so nice to have all of my kids and all of my grandkids under one roof. You know what? One of the fun things for me is watching my younger children. Of course, I say younger. They're all, you know, college age or older now. Interact with their siblings and allow them the chance to have a couple of days kind of unfettered to kind of love on their nieces and sit now their nephew. Right? That was so fun for us. Some memories were made. And I want to thank the fine folks at Stark Vegas Clubhouse for setting that up for us. It was a wonderful experience. And I think you will have a similar experience should you stay there as well. So rather than have everybody stay in like five hotel rooms or six hotel rooms scattered all over the Golden Triangle, get everybody together, six bedrooms, soon to be three baths, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. What's better than that? You're coming for a ball game weekend, whether it be basketball, baseball, or football, or you're just coming midweek. Maybe you've got some vacation time you need to use. Come up here and enjoy some of your favorite restaurants in your favorite city in the world, Starkville, Mississippi. Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page will auto-populate, and you can peruse through the pictures of all the amenities available to you and your guest. Some booking options will pop up. You can book through Airbnb or VRBO. It's completely up to you. Or you can save some money by booking through the Evolve website. Yeah, use promo code BSR10. That's Beautiful Steve Robertson, the number 10, to get 10% off your stay. Just by listening to this show, you're saving some money at the premier place to stay in the Golden Triangle, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Accept no limitations. Accept no duplications. Accept no imitations. There's no better place, whether it be a family group, a friend group, to get together and just have a great time. Plenty of parking out there, a lot of peace and quiet, and you can just kind of have a weekend or a week, midweek to yourself. Super cool. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, in the time that we have been together, Mississippi State has picked up another Mississippi State football commitment, kicker Hayden Chambers. Picks the Bulldogs over Auburn, which is interesting because both of his parents went to Auburn. Now, Mississippi State offered a full scholarship, so that makes a difference in this thing, too. So many of you don't do Twitter. So let me read you his message, and we'll have an opportunity to speak to him later tonight, and we'll get that up for you at Gene's page, probably in the morning. But he says, hey, many people know me as a football player, but my identity is 100% in Christ. I'm so grateful for this opportunity to compete at the SEC level. Thank you to my coaches who push me to be a better version of myself every day and hold me to the standard of Fort Payne football. Thank you, Mom and Dad, for teaching me that above all else, keep Jesus number one in my heart and show him in all that I do. I had a typo there. Thank you to my friends for always having my back and being there for me in time of need. If you think that God won't bless your hard work, I'm a testament to that. All glory to God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit. Now, the first thing that I'll tell you about that, I like people that are bold about their character, right? And I think also, too, there is a certain level of gratitude that is evident in this young man's speech and in his share with us. And I think that will play well, obviously, to a huge segment of our fan base. Now, you know, we've had, you know, Weston Graves is a guy, too, that, of similar character. And I think a lot of Kyle Ferry. You know, and kickers sometimes can kind of be weirder guys, right? I mean, there's a reason guys go play soccer and then migrate over to the football field. But Chambers is a really good player. And when you think about the history of Fort Payne High School, they have kind of built a legacy of producing college-level kickers. Of course, Evan McPherson, a name you know, right? He's now in the NFL playing with the Cincinnati Bengals. Former Bulldog commitment, went to Florida with Dan Mullen. But McPherson, I won't say he put the first wheel on that wagon because he had an older brother that had a very successful high school career. But we've gone through a stretch here where they are just kind of stacking up kickers. And if you are recruiting in the Southeastern Conference and you need a kicker, it's probably pretty smart to stop by Fort Payne and to say, hey, let me see your kicker. Now, Chambers is a guy that can compete in all three kicking disciplines. That's punting, place kicking, field goal kicking, and kickoffs. He can do a little bit of everything. He is rated higher as a field goal kicker than a punter. But all of those guys that kick typically learn to do it all. And it makes a lot of sense to scholarship a kicker that can help you in all of those disciplines. And so while this may not be a commitment that really moves the needle or changes the trajectory of the class in the eyes of many, it's a very valuable pickup. Now, there's some other things that are coming, right? Kind of recapping you a little bit. We weren't exactly sure when Hayden was going to announce. He told me when I interviewed him, following his visit, it would be sometime soon. That's all that he would say is soon. And so today proved to be soon. Tamario Johnson, a safety out of Pascagoula, he is going to announce on the 4th. It's going to be a handful of decisions on the 4th. That is the only one at this point that I expect to go the way of the Bulldogs. We had a ton of guys, obviously, that visited that have made decisions to join Mississippi State and some others that have elected to join some other programs. Among the latest is Leon Knoll Jr., who told us during his exit interview that he was going to announce on July 7th. However, phone call from Matt Rhule yesterday kind of changed things. Nebraska was believed to be out of contention, that it was going to be a Baylor and Mississippi State decision. Proved to be Nebraska. He announced this today. And so kind of running through this, I think it's important. You know, a lot of guys are making decisions, but you know, a lot can change between now and National Signing Day, as you guys know. So kind of looking back here, Javen Holmes is a young man that has Mississippi State as a finalist between Houston and Rice. I don't get the sense that State is really pushing for a commitment. However, I do believe they would take it if he offered it. He projects as a linebacker. He's listed as a safety, but we do think at 6'2", 200, he will be a linebacker in college. Chris Carbon is an edge out of Hillgrove High School in Powder Springs, Georgia, finalist of Mississippi State and Georgia Tech. We expect that to go the way of the Yellow Jackets. Moving right along here, Darrell Rivers out of McCurtain State was his first big offer. He was very excited about that, took the official visit to State. We expect him to announce for Tennessee in the days ahead. Cottrell Webb out of Collins Hill High School in Sewanee, Georgia. State has kind of moved on from him shortly after the visit. He is a bit of a tweener. And so, you know, he's got some finalists. Indiana is one of those schools, but Mississippi State, not really a factor there. And then Kayvon Conciero is going to announce on July the 11th. Of the big names remaining on the visit list, he is the one guy that I think we had the best chance to get. Now, other breaking news, I guess, in some respects, this happened here recently. Grimsley High School in Greensboro, North Carolina, Cossie Barnes released his top six, and he told me when I interviewed him late last week that he would be narrowing the field down a little bit before he made the call. Well, he has done that. So the final six, South Carolina, Rutgers, North Carolina, Miami, Mississippi State, and Kentucky. He plans to announce July 26th at 7:15, and that's Eastern time. So we got plenty of time to prep for that. But this is a young man, too, that's done a lot of good things. This is a guy, too, that a lot of people think may go to South Carolina. They've recruited him very, very hard. You know, Shane Beamer, done a great job at South Carolina, and maybe great pushing it a little bit, but done a good job at South Carolina. Probably has exceeded expectations. And the one pick right now for his services is in favor of South Carolina. So we'll kind of see how that plays out. And it looks like maybe, you know, his final six are going to be his, you know, his official visits. You know, maybe that's how this thing works out. But, yeah, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Rutgers, South Carolina, Miami. Yeah, good group of finalists there. But I don't expect to get him at this point. You know, our feelings may change between now and decision day. But at this point, I would probably go with South Carolina, too. We mentioned Hayden Chambers jumping into the boat. We expect Mario Johnson to follow suit when he announces here in a few days. And then Iverson McCoy has moved his date up. He was originally saying July 15th. Now I think it's July 3rd. We expect him to go elsewhere. And I think Mississippi State would be perfectly okay with that. Bryson Cooley out of West Jones High School looked to be an LSU State battle. Well, now Georgia's jumped in the mix, which may slow this process down a little bit. I'm hearing he wants to take an official visit to Georgia before he makes the call. And then tomorrow afternoon, T.J. Watt of Jackson Academy, we expect him to commit to Tennessee. That's what we're expecting to see here. State has made it interesting. And again, one of the things that I want to point out, too, is what recruiting looks like today may not be what it looks like in December. Now, what I mean by that is all it takes is one school to pop up late and you say, hey, we originally had talked about this number, you know, because rev share is a part of things now, right? And so you can legally do that. You can financially incentivize high school recruits to come be a part of your program. You know, the question you got to ask yourself is how much juice do I get for the squeeze? But let's say there's an edge out there or a linebacker out there or a wide receiver that maybe chooses somebody else. And then later in the process, you show up and say, hey, listen, we want to circle back to this. And I know you agreed to maybe $150,000 for this school. We're willing to give you $200,000 or $250,000. And there's going to be a lot of changes late, and a lot of it is going to be financially based. And we're going to do some of that too. You know, we're not the poor old state that some people suggest that we are. And so I share that with you because, yeah, it's easy to get frustrated right now. And so much of this too, us and our peers do a lot of a good job covering these young people, and you kind of get to know them a little bit. And so you kind of begin to wonder, you know, it's like, hey, you had 19 visitors for the final weekend, right? 19. And as it stands right now, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 of those that have already committed to state. We expect one more. So that's a pretty good batting average. You know, 13 of 19. For a big visit like that, and of course you lose some guys, and you don't know what Bryson Cooley's going to do yet. You know, we'll see. But you know, he's a guy too that you're still kind of monitoring. That you look back at the weekend of the 13th, you had 16 visitors. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of those committed. So again, a pretty good batting average. And then you're still waiting on Kayvon to announce his decision. So you could be a little bit better. And then you go back to the first big weekend, we had 8 that weekend. And ironically, getting them early didn't prove to be very successful. State had 8 visitors and 2 of them have committed. And of course, if State gets Chris Carbon, which would be a surprise at this point, or Javen Holmes, you could end up around 50%. But I share that because, it's not the closing rate that bothers me. And here's what I mean by that. And we discussed this kind of at length. What bothers me is that we're not getting more talented prospects to campus. We historically have kind of lived with our best teams with the high 3-star, low 4-star. At this point, we don't have any 4-stars. And it's not because the ranking model has changed. We're just not able to get some of these guys on campus. And we were during the spring evaluation period and during junior day visits and things of that nature. But I wanted to share something else with you, too, because, the comparisons between State and Ole Miss are never ending. But I wanted to share this, too, because we all become very acutely aware of where we are, right? But on the Ole Miss side of things, they have had 8 Mississippi kids set up to take visits. 8. And of those 8, they've gotten 0 of them so far. Now, there's still some decisions pending. But 8 visitors from the state of Mississippi and not a single commitment for Ole Miss among that group. That included Corey Wells from Petal, who I like a lot. I think he has a bright future ahead of him. Jace Matthews, a guy that we were very favorable on early on out of Greene County and thought that we had a good chance to get him, visits Ole Miss, but doesn't visit Mississippi State. Dalton Toothman visits Ole Miss, commits to State. Jerelyn McCoy was a guy early on that a lot of people thought in and around Tupelo would end up at Ole Miss. Well, he still may, but he's been committed to 3 other schools, currently committed to Florida. We'll see how things go. Xavier Pooh-Man McDonald visits there, hasn't committed there. Mitchell Smith going to announce his decision. Tuna Iverson McCoy and Nolan Wilson. And so, again, it's not just happening to us. That's one thing that I wanted to point out. You didn't get a lot of the big-name players on the Ole Miss side to visit either. And I think that's something that perhaps many of our fans have missed. I think this is bigger than a Mississippi State issue. Kind of working through the Ole Miss commitment list here, they have 2 kids from the state of Mississippi committed. That's Braylon Williams from Tupelo, a guy that we thought we were going to get. And then Demarius Yates, a guy at one time who was committed to Mississippi State. So Ole Miss has 10 commitments right now, and of course they've become very portal heavy, but currently class is ranked 55th in the country. And so I point that out just because of the fact I think sometimes we get so caught up in what we're doing or not doing, we're not always fully aware of kind of what's going on around the state unless we're having a head-to-head battle. And so I share that with you, not in any way to cast aspersions at Ole Miss or make fun of their class or anything, but the great class of Mississippi are not visiting State and Ole Miss. And that is something that's got to change. When you look at when State and Ole Miss have been their best, it's when they've been able to keep the best in-state players home. And so I share that with you just because I think a lot of people have just kind of been caught up in what they feel are our struggles. And they don't realize that this whole issue with the top talent in Mississippi going elsewhere, but also not even visiting State and Ole Miss. And again, just kind of working through this, like Tristan Keys and Braylon Womack, neither one visited State or Ole Miss. TJ White visited State, did not visit Ole Miss. Nolan Wilson visited Ole Miss, not State. Xavier McDonald, same situation. Demarius Yates, it's a guy we'll still kind of monitor here, but kind of Darion Albert, a guy that's expected to announce for Tennessee tomorrow. I just mentioned that just because I think it's important to understand. Tylen Wilson's another. And so Preston Ashley commits to Colorado, So there's a lot of these guys that are, kind of looking outside of the state of Mississippi for their college football futures. So it's not just happening to us. But we have to do our part to fix it. So there you go. If you hadn't done so, go to dirtynoblebook.com. You get signed copies of all my sports titles there, plus the memoir, When the Bottom Falls. If you are a person that has suffered with substance abuse, or you just like a good comeback story, or you'd like to learn more about me, you can read When the Bottom Falls. Get a lot of messages from people all over the country about that book. I'm very grateful to have had the opportunity to write that and share some experience, wisdom, and hope. Come float with us at True West Floats, Bob Starkville. Dial 662-268-7601. Get all your questions answered about floating. If you're a person that suffers with chronic anxiety or pain, we may be able to help you. We've helped many others. Or maybe you just need a break or a reset, or you want to buy a gift for somebody else. You can get a gift card too, just by calling and speaking to my lovely wife, Dana. Come join us over at jeanspage.com, the Mississippi State website that has served you so many years, and will do moving forward. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand, through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.